Hello, welcome to the Direct Compute lecture series. Today we'll be talking about GPU optimizations and performance. My name is James Fung. I'm from Developer Technology at NVIDIA. These are the contents that we're going to cover. We're going to start with work distribution best practices. How big should you make your dispatches and how many threads should you put in your grids? Then we're going to move on to a scan reduction example. We're going to start with an initial implementation and I'm going to go through several optimizations that will give you speed up, and we'll show and explain how to do those optimizations. Finally, we'll talk about multi-GPU best practices. So maximizing the hardware occupancy. So recall that parallel code is executed in hardware by warps of 32 threads, and that these warps execute concurrently. Thread instructions are executed sequentially, so executing other warps is the only way to hide latencies and keep the hardware busy. So basically, when one warp, say, goes to fetch from memory, another warp can then occupy the arithmetic units. So we'd like to try to maximize occupancy, and occupancy is something we define as the number of resident warps divided by the maximum possible number of resident warps that a shader unit would support. Ideally, we'd like to have an occupancy of 1, meaning that we've loaded that particular shader unit with the maximum number of warps that it can support. Now, a thread group resides on a single shader unit. And that shader unit basically divides up its resources among all the thread groups on it. So your occupancy then is limited by the resource usage. So some limiting factors then are the thread group size declaration, how large you make your thread groups, the thread group shared memory usage, how much shared memory each thread group needs, and the number of registers used by every thread group. So let's take an example. For a hardware shader unit, let's say we have the following specs. The shader unit supports 8 thread groups maximum, has a total of 32 kilobytes of shared memory, which needs to be split between all the thread groups resident on it, and can support up to 1024 threads maximum. Now let's say we have a shader program with a thread group size of 128 threads, and each thread group requires 24 kilobytes of shared memory. This means that it could only run one thread group per shader unit because of the shared memory restriction here. 24 out of the 32 kilobytes is used, and so no other thread groups could fit. This means that in this case, we'd only get 128 threads on that particular shader unit, which is a fairly low occupancy. That's 128 threads out of 1024 threads maximum. You can get more specific details about your shader units from the hardware vendors. Another limiting factor to occupancy is registers. So the registers used by each thread also affects your occupancy, and this is known as register pressure. You don't have much control over this. Generally, you'll rely on the drivers to do the right thing, but you should be aware of it. There's some options such as putting operands or operations into shared memory instead of into registers. Tuning and experimentation is required to find the ideal balance, and this balance can vary from different types of hardware, different types of generations. So one option as well is to store presets or have different shaders optimized for different GPUs. So let's talk also now a little bit about how big of dispatch should you make and how big of thread groups should you have. Well, generally, the number of thread groups should be greater than the number of multiprocessors on your GPU. So basically, if you satisfy this condition, then all multiprocessors have at least one thread group to execute. The number of thread groups ideally would be greater than twice the number of multiprocessors. This means that multiple thread groups can run concurrently in a multiprocessor. So when one thread group, say, is waiting on a barrier synchronization, another thread group can have its warps run on that multiprocessor. This is, of course, subject to resource availability, as we discussed. Registers and shared memory used by each thread group can limit the number of thread groups resident on a multiprocessor. You'd like to have the number of thread groups greater than, say, 100 to allow scaling to future devices. So thread groups are executed in a pipeline fashion, and if you have thousands, say, of thread groups per dispatch, that'll let you scale across multiple generations of GPUs. Finally, the number of threads per thread group should be a multiple of the warp size. That means that all threads in a warp are doing work. Let's look at an example now of optimizations. We're going to start with a parallel reduction example. So what is parallel reduction? It's a common and important data parallel primitive and it's easy to implement in compute shaders. It's a little bit harder to get it right, as we'll see. But it serves as a good optimization example, and we'll walk through seven different optimization. And it demonstrates several important optimization strategies. So what is a parallel reduction? Basically, it's a tree-based approach for taking a reduction of a buffer. In this case, we're going to look at a sum. So we have a buffer of numbers, and we'd like to try and find the sum of it, and we'd like to do it in a data parallel fashion. The approach we're going to take is a tree-based approach, and it's used within each thread block. And we're going to need to be able to process multiple thread blocks to process very large arrays. So each thread block is going to process a segment of the array. And by having many of these thread blocks, we're going to be able to keep all the GPU multiprocessors busy. So how do we communicate, however, between partial results between different thread blocks? Well, this kind of talks to the problem of global synchronization. If we could synchronize across all thread blocks, we could easily reduce very large arrays, since you could simply do a global sync after each block produces this result. And after all blocks reach the sync, you can continue recursively. But one thing to note, however, is that GPUs don't have global synchronization. This would be expensive to build in GPU hardware for hardware with lots of processors on it. Additionally, it might force a programmer to run fewer blocks in order to avoid deadlock, which would reduce your overall efficiency. So instead of having global synchronization, what we do is we decompose the problem into multiple launches. Each launch of the shader serves as a global synchronization point. Additionally, each launch has negligible hardware overhead and very small software overhead. So we're going to avoid global syncs by decomposing the computation into multiple invocations. So this diagram here shows the flow, where we have one invocation, or one dispatch, where we perform some of the summation, and in a subsequent dispatch, we'll finish up the summation. In the case of reductions, the code for all levels can be the same. And so we just simply need to do a recursive kernel invocation. So what's our optimization goal? Well, we should strive to reach the peak GPU performance, but we need to choose the right metric. There's two possible metrics. One would be gigaflops per second, and that would be for compute-bound kernels. Another metric would be the bandwidth, the throughput of data moving through the kernels, and that would be for memory-bound kernels. So reductions have a very low arithmetic intensity. Arithmetic intensity we define as the number of arithmetic operations per memory lookup. For reduction, we're simply doing, in this case, an addition. So we expect to have basically one flop, an addition, per element loaded, which means we have low arithmetic intensity, in which case we should strive to make our shader reach the peak bandwidth of the card. So let's take, for example, a G80 GPU. We can calculate its peak theoretical bandwidth as 86.4 gigabytes, so we'll shoot for that as our goal for optimization. So let's start off with looking at a very basic reduction shader. So this shader here shows our first implementation of reduction shader. We've declared a read-write structured buffer that's going to hold our data. We've defined our group dimensions to be 128 in this case. We've also declared some shared memory that we're going to use. In the actual reduction, then, we see that the first segment of code is basically having each thread loading a single element from global memory into a particular shared memory location. We then do a group memory barrier with group sync in order to make sure that all the shared memory data is loaded before moving on. The center part of the code, the for loop, is basically performing a reduction in shared memory. And between each level of reduction, we have a group memory barrier. Finally, after the steps of the reduction, the element 0 holds the final sum, and that needs to get written back out to global memory. So we have a single thread, thread 0, write that back out to global from shared. So let's look at that again. This is the same code, but this diagram shows what it's actually doing. So again, we load data into a contiguous segment of shared memory from a contiguous segment of global memory. And now, basically, in the code, each thread adds itself plus its neighbor's shared memory value and stores it to its own shared memory location. So on the first step, we have each thread adding neighbor one to the right. Now it's a for loop, and at each iteration we simply change the stride a little bit. So in the second step, each thread that's active now, threads 0, 4, 8, and 12, add a neighbor 2 to the right. And we continue on in this fashion, and finally at the very end, thread 0 carries out the last operation, summing two numbers, and it gets the sum of the entire original buffer, in this case 41. So if we start with this basic implementation, and we put this on a G80, we could see that we would get about 8.054 milliseconds for completing this shader on 2 to the power 22 ints. And we can compute the bandwidth out here to be about 2.083 gigabytes. So we're falling short of our goal of approximately 80 gigabytes per second. So what are some optimizations we can do then? Well, let's look at the code. And we notice, firstly, that inside our for loop, we're going to get highly divergent branching, and that's going to result in poor performance. So what is divergence? So divergence is a main performance concern when you're doing branching. Basically, it occurs when threads within a single warp take a different path. And what happens is that different execution paths must be serialized. So for instance, if threads take an if-else path, and some threads take the if part, and some threads take the else part, then some of the if portion needs to be evaluated first, and then the else portion needs to be evaluated. So there's ways to avoid divergence, however, when your branch condition is a function of your thread ID. So let's take an example with divergence. So divergence is going to occur any time that your branch granularity is less than your warp size. So take, for example, if thread ID X is greater than 2, you take a branch, else not. In that case, threads 0 and 1 can take one branch, and the rest of the threads in the warp take a different branch. And each branch needs to be evaluated. But an example without divergence is if branch granularity is a whole multiple of the warp size. So in the second example, we'd have, say, a group of threads, say 32 or 64, would all take one branch, and then the other threads in the thread group would take a different branch. But because it's a whole multiple of warp size, then the warp doesn't need to evaluate the other part of the branch. And so we've avoided divergence. So let's go back to our example now. How can we apply this in our example? Well, we can replace the divergent branch in the inner loop and in the upper code, and instead use a lower code with a strided index in order to create a non-divergent branch. So in the upper code, originally, the if statement would be taken by thread 0, 2, 4, every even number thread. In the lower piece of code, however, now the branch is being taken by 0, 1, 2, and so on. We'll perform the same work, but we simply have a contiguous set of threads performing that work instead of a interleave set. So let's look again at the diagram of what it's doing. So again, we have the same reduction being performed. But you'll note now that instead of, at the first step, thread 0, 2, 4 executing, instead we have thread 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. So a contiguous set of threads now is executing the first step of the reduction. Similarly, a contiguous set of threads performs step 2, and so on. And finally, thread 0 is operating and gets the sum. So we've gotten the same sum, but now we've eliminated a lot of the divergence. However, now we have a new problem, shared memory bank conflicts. So let's look briefly first at what we get for performance by eliminating the branch conflicts, the divergent branches. So we can see we've gone from 8 milliseconds to about 3.5 milliseconds. So that's a 2.3x speed up just with that one optimization. So let's now talk about thread group shared memory bank conflicts. Well, recall that thread group shared memory is addressed by banks. So we have 32 banks, and each address is 32 bits. And these banks are basically arranged linearly with the addresses. So thread group shared memory addresses that are 32 D words apart are going to use the same bank. And accessing those addresses from multiple threads will create a bank conflict. So some ways around this are to declare a shared memory as a 2D array, say, my array YX. And if you increment X first, say, have the thread ID increment in the X area, then in the Y area. And that's essential if X, say, is multiple 32. If we've done it the other way, say we had all the threads use the thread ID in the Y index, then we'd all hit the same initial bank. Another way around this is to pad arrays in order to avoid bank conflicts. So instead of, say, using a stride of 32, use a stride of 33. In that case, if every thread was operating on every other element, say, then that extra little bit of padding would help you avoid a bank conflict. Let's look again at how we can apply the strategy of avoiding bank conflicts to our example. In our example for reduction, we know that each thread needs to add two elements, but they actually needn't be the immediate neighbor. It can be any other element in the array. So what we're going to do here, instead of adding the immediate neighbor now, we're going to have a group of seven threads add a different group of eight threads to it. And so in this way, we're eliminating the bank conflict, but we're performing the same reduction. So this is in the code how we can get around the bank conflicts. We're replacing the strided indexing in the inner loop, and we're going to use a reverse loop, and we're going to use some thread ID-based indexing to achieve this new type of addition. So by eliminating these bank conflicts then, we get approximately 1.7 milliseconds as a runtime, and we can compute a bandwidth of approximately 9 gigabytes per second. And this represents a 2x speed up over our previous implementation. And cumulatively, from our original implementation, we're now at approximately 4.6 times faster. So we have another problem. We have idle threads. So half the threads in the first loop basically are idle, and that's wasteful. So one solution here is you have the number of blocks and replace a single load instead with two loads and the first add of the reduction. By performing that optimization, we get another 1.7x speed up, and we're at 17.3 gigabytes per second. Now at 17 gigabytes per second, we're still far from bandwidth bound. Now we know that reduction has a low arithmetic intensity, so a likely remaining bottleneck is instruction overhead. And cellular instructions that are not loads, stores, or arithmetic for the core computation. In other words, address arithmetic and loop overhead can be holding us back. So one strategy here is to unroll loops. So as the reduction proceeds, the number of active threads is decreasing. And when a number of active threads, S, say, is less than 32, we only have a single warp left. Now recall that all instructions are SIMD synchronous within a warp. So that means that when S is less than or equal to 32, we no longer need a barrier call. And we don't even need to have an if statement on the threads because it doesn't actually save any work. So let's look at unrolling the last six iterations of the inner loop. So this slide here shows the last iterations being unrolled. So instead of the for statement going all the way down to the last thread, we simply have six iterations now inside a single if statement. And we've eliminated the synchronizations. And this saves useless work in all the warps, not just the last one. So by performing that optimization now, we have a runtime of just over half a millisecond, and we're reaching 31.2 gigabytes per second. Overall, from our initial implementation, we've achieved a 15x speedup. Assuming we knew the number of iterations beforehand at compile time, we could completely unroll the reduction. Luckily, the block size is limited by the GPU, and we're going to stick to power of two block sizes. So we can easily unroll for a fixed block size. So we can simply define the number of threads in the thread group and then unroll the code. By performing that optimization, we just about 0.38 milliseconds, and we've achieved a 21x speedup over the initial implementation. Finally, each thread can perform multiple adds. So we can perform the load and add of two elements with a while loop that performs as many adds as necessary. And note that we're loading from global memory and we're using the dispatch size to maintain coalescing. Performing that final optimization, we reach approximately 62.6 gigabytes per second on the card, a 30x speedup over our initial implementation. on 32 million elements, we'd reach 73 gigabytes per second. This slide here shows the final optimized compute shader. So although we've made a number of different optimizations, the actual shader code itself remains compact. Here we see a performance comparison between the implementations with different optimizations for different sizes. Finally, a note on multi-GPU. Multiple GPUs can be used in a single system for task or data parallel GPU processing. So in a task parallel situation, you can have different kernels running on different GPUs. In a data parallel situation, you can have the same kernel running on different GPUs, and you simply divide up the data that you send to it. In both cases, the host explicitly manages I/O and workload for every GPU. So you'll need to choose the best split in order to minimize the inter-GPU communication. This is because any communication between GPUs needs to happen via the host memory. That requires a trip over the PCI Express bus and through host memory. Thank you very much.